in the know, nonstop Vikings talk. It's Purple Daily on Score North and ScoreNorth.com. Purple Daily, presented by Surly Brewing Company.
You know, wins, you know, I normally move on from those pretty quick and tend to not, you know, have too many warm and fuzzy feelings after a win. It's on to the next. I would say it's the exact opposite with a loss, and you really find yourself, you know, especially just how I handle a lot of situations, I always look inward first, you know, and that was immediately following, you know, the game. You start that process, and, you know, you just know you can be better.
You know, I'm going to call Judd out for something here to start Purple Daily.
Nice.
I'm gonna call your ass to the carpet here, Judd.
Right? Sure.
So on Wrap with Royce today on our Mackie and Judd podcast, Score North YouTube channel, you said, and you've done this twice this week, look at Kevin O'Connell, just taking the blame for everything. It's insinuating that it's kind of BS. He's just taking accountability, taking the blame for everything, right? Well, you gave him 50% of your pie chart of blame after that game on Tuesday. So he should be if that's the case, he should be taking blame and looking inward, shouldn't he?
The issue is you can't do that publicly all the time, or it loses its effect. I mean, I'm talking from an effect of trying to say it's my fault. You can't say everything. This goes back to his rookie year, I believe, when Carl Anthony Towns fell on the sword for every Wolves loss. And after a while, it's like, dude, no, that's not how it works. Now, once in a while, play calling? Absolutely. But if you're going to do that with everything, I think most importantly, because I don't care as much about us, I think it loses its effect with the players. If you're always like, well, it's my fault. And it also absolves them a little bit too much.
Well, I guarantee he's not doing that in the film session with these guys. He's not sitting up in the front of the room saying, so Ed Ingram got blown off the ball there. Guys, that's my fault. I think he's protecting them to the media a little bit. And he's being honest. Like, he probably didn't do a great job, as you pointed out.
No, he didn't.
Up for that game.
And I'm talking about... Go ahead, Dex.
No, maybe I'm going to go instead. No.
And to defend Judd, you can have the blame on Kevin O'Connell for the pie chart and then also still take the accountability and kind of parsect dissect the accountability of if it's authentic and if it's working or not.
What would it take to get Kevin O'Connell to do his own pie chart of blame after losses up at the podium? Pulls out his little piece of paper. All right, guys, I got six pieces of pie here. Judd and I have worked on this together.
Yep.
I'll take 40%. I didn't get the guys ready, but 20%'s got to go to Garrett Bradbury. What was this front office thinking that he could come back and be the starting center?
What sort of concerns me a little bit too, and I get O'Connell's trying to be the anti-Zim, so I understand where this is coming from. What sort of concerns me a little bit too, though, is I think we all can agree that in a lot of situations when things go wrong, Kirk looks to avoid blame as much as possible. And again, yesterday, like, there was a lot of, we got to do this. And like, there's never the, because, you know, each pick has its own story. And I had one bad pick. It's like, no, dude, you threw three picks. But anyway, I don't want to absolve Kirk consistently, because I think it creates a comfort of being absolved. Like, that's the tough thing about these jobs, is you got to walk a line of, yes, you don't want to crap on your players, and you don't want to blame them for everything, which it felt like Mike started to do. But you also need to hold them accountable, and you also need to know which ones need to be held accountable so that they don't feel this, well, it's not going to be my fault. That's where it's tough.
I love his style of leadership to this point, and I think the most telling thing will be, how do they bounce back in the next game, a tough game against the Lions.
Agreed.
After what happened on a short week as well. By the way, this is Purple Daily, Daily Vikings Entertainment. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die. And the show is presented by our friends at TCL. No matter what you watch, TCL has award-winning TVs for any budget, any space, all with stunning picture quality. And TCL makes more than just TVs. They offer mobile products, audio devices, home appliances. TCL bringing you joy and simplicity through innovative technology. We will get to our State of the Vikings offense episode here, as we do every single Thursday. But, man, we saw so many people in that first home game sending us pictures inside the stadium of their Before I Die can from Surly. It's really cool just to see our show's motto on a beer can, Surly, thank you, inside U.S. Bank Stadium. Just kind of a cool thing for us to see you guys with those cans.
Absolutely, and there will be another chance on Sunday to enjoy the Before I Die beer. Here's the best part, though. So Surly has multiple beers available in the stadium, because I also saw a couple of folks in the, I believe it was, upper deck who couldn't find Before I Die, and they're like, but I found a Logic Bomb. That's right. Surly has an answer, just like a great coach. Surly has an answer for every type of beer drinker and taste, and that's what makes Surly Brewing so damn effective.
A freaking man.
Thank you.
All right, so every Thursday during the season, we just do a deep dive into the Vikings offense, and I bring to you guys a handful of categories or interesting statistics, and we kind of make our way through each of them. And this one is a little bit of a follow-up on the week one state of the offense address and some of the themes we've been talking about throughout the offseason. So I personally believe, and trust me, I am an expert having played eighth grade football, but have watched a lot of football and commented on a lot of football in my life. I believe the best offenses in the NFL have three specific things in common. There's other things too, but to be a great offense, you got to be great on third down. You got to be really good in the face of pressure. You can't just, oh my God, they're getting pressure. What do we do, right? Like, you're going to face pressure in NFL games. And then number three, they don't take a lot of penalties. You can't take three offensive holding penalties and two false starts and still expect to chunk yardage and put yourself in a good position on third down. Now, there have been a lot of offenses in NFL history that can take penalties, and they're just so good that it doesn't matter.
Right.
They can, like, the Buffalo Bills were kind of mid-pack in penalties taken last year. But, oh, it's third and 12, whatever. We have Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. They just make up for it. But in general, great on third down, great against pressure, and don't shoot yourself in the foot with a lot of penalties. Mm-hmm. So those are the three categories I'd love to run through here after the first 2 weeks and kind of see, all right, where are the Vikings in these three categories? Now, for some context, the 2021 Super Bowl winning Rams that Kevin O'Connell came from, in those three categories last year, they had the fewest false start and holding penalties in the league. So they were basically number one in those offensive penalty categories. They had the second highest yards per attempt when facing pressure in their passing game. They did throw quite a few interceptions, but didn't prevent them from winning a Super Bowl. But when they were completing passes, it was chunked down the field against pressure.
Yep.
And then they were seventh in third down conversion rate. The Buffalo Bills last year, another gold standard offense in the NFL. So despite they were kind of mid-pack in penalties, but because they were third highest in third down conversion rate and by far league leading 16 touchdown passes when facing pressure, they were able to overcome some things. So let's start with the first one. Let's start with the good news. Penalties through the first couple weeks here. So the Vikings took, I think it was like the second or third most false start and offensive holding penalties in the league last year. So far through two games, they've only taken one false start and zero offensive holding. So they're just, it's early, but there seems to be a little bit more discipline with the jumps, a little bit more discipline. Now, I would recommend there was a couple times in that Philadelphia game you might want to hold somebody. Hope you don't get caught when there's a jailbreak in the second half. But I would say that is the good news, that this team through two games has been much more disciplined with these offensive penalties, false starts and holdings, than last year's team was.
Yeah, because they took what on against the Bengals in their opener last year? I think the first play from scrimmage, CJ Ham flinched and got called for a
false
start.
There were three on the first drive, I think.
Yes, yes. But you know what, too? I think that this is a product of the fact that the offense, while certainly not perfect and a work in progress, is going to be flat out more disciplined, right? Because like, you're not going to have it. It never felt like that offense, especially in 2021, had a lot of discipline to it. And certainly once you got through the scripted plays, it seemed to get worse. So I do think that O'Connell has established at least a discipline and false starts. Look, I mean, it shouldn't be hard to avoid them. Like that, that's one that, that's just not professional. Holds are a little bit more arbitrary. But yeah, I'm not surprised that one of the first things that O'Connell probably has preached about and can get across is, you know what, guys, don't be jumping.
Yeah. And some of this, you know, again, I remember back to that Bengals game you referenced. And on the next day's show, I said, some of that's on the quarterback, man. You're the one that's calling the play. You're the one that's giving the snap count. And you're the one that's delivering the cadence at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
So if it happens once, whatever. If it happens like three times in the first few plays, what is happening there? Just that's someone's got a lead in that situation. But anyways, nothing's ever Kirk's fault. Let's get to the second category here, because this is where the bad news comes in. These are where the correctable things start to surface, okay?
All right.
Third down success. Now, third down in the NFL, the average third down in the NFL is like third and seven-ish, third and six and a half, third and seven-ish.
Sure.
So largely situations where the opposing team knows you're going to pass and you still have to convert a first down. That's the chess match. It's third and five. It's third and eight. It's third and 10. It's third and three. You're probably passing on third down more often than not. And the opposing team knows you're probably passing. So how can you still gain yards and convert the third down when they know you're going to pass? Well, the Vikings so far this year are converting only 32% of their third downs. That's in the bottom like seven in the NFL so far. It's down from their 36% rate last year. So they've been worse on third down so far this year than last year. So 32%. The best teams convert 50-ish percent. So they're way off the mark last year, way off the mark so far this year. And that set me down a wormhole. I was kind of curious because one of my biggest criticisms of Kirk is when the opposing team knows he has to pass, it's harder for him. You don't always get your first read. You don't always because they might have it covered in some way, right?
Sure.
You're not as mobile, so you can't get away from pressure. So Kirk Cousins' offenses, Minnesota and Washington, where have they ranked on third down conversions? Mm-hmm. The last 6 years. They've been atrocious. 23rd, 25th, 17th, 9th under Kevin Stefanski, 26th, and 31st. If you go back to 2015 and 16, his first 2 years in the league, those Washington offenses were 5th and 5th in third down conversion rate. Why is that, you might ask? My Brian Windhorst, why would that be?
Why would that be?
Why would that be?
Right. Now that's interesting.
Well, in 2015 and 16, the offensive coordinator for the Washington Redskins at the time, now Commanders, was Sean McVay. So basically, when Kirk Cousins hasn't had Sean McVay as the offensive coordinator for his offense, he has been, and his teams have been, atrocious, largely, on third down conversion rate. I don't know what that means other than, yeah, Sean, there's a reason why Sean McVay got hired as a 31-year-old head coach coming from Washington.
Right.
And this tends to fit sort of the eye test. And people are going to, well, but look at the coordinators he's had. And, well, Mike Zimmer was a defensive-minded coach and offensive line, and there's all these things. But at the end of the day, third down conversion is more about the quarterback making a play than all of the other things around that guy. And if you need all the other things around you to be perfect, it goes back to, all right, what are we paying you for here? So they have to be better on third downs. And it's a running theme for years and years with Kirk Cousins' offenses.
Do you have what the average third down and distance is as well? Because like that's,
I don't have
thing.
That for this year yet. Last year, it was the longest in the league.
Right. Which is setting you up for failure.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my question, because it becomes hard to call plays if it's always third and eight or third and nine. If it's third and five or third and four, it becomes simpler. So I would be curious what the average down and distance is, because that's going to have a direct impact on the whole thing. Where, you know, you could run, but if it's third and eight, you got to pass.
Yep. And I don't have that for today's show, but I will keep an eye on that for the season. And it was a major problem last year in that first and second down, whether it was because of penalties or just conservative play calling, getting stuffed on a second and 10, and now it's third and nine. The Vikings had the longest yards to go on third down last year. But because they haven't really taken penalties, I don't know that. I mean, I'm not saying that they're sitting third and four every time.
Right.
But I don't think that's as much of a problem as it was a year ago. But I will find that data for a future Purple Daily episode.
I'm just curious.
But I guess just generally, what do you think about this? That Kirk Cousins' offenses are bad on third down.
Oh, it's the least surprising thing in the world to me. Again, when the pressure gets dialed up, he usually, in my opinion, regresses. And so, yeah, if he's consistently facing a third and seven, third and eight, where he has to pass, I don't think that that puts him in a position, because then he's going to feel the pressure. Like, I mean, that's what happened again on Monday, second half. You know, we've talked about this all week. You go back and watch that game. The Philadelphia Eagles were several times attempting to give that game back. Mm-hmm. Like, they were literally inviting, hey, Vikings, you sure you don't want to stick around here? Here's 7 points here, and here's 3 points there. And the Vikings are like, whoa, man, no way. And so I think if you look at Kirk from a statistical standpoint of is there pressure there, you'll find that the statistical package of plays that would be considered higher pressure are probably plays in which, for the most part, he does not succeed. It's why the Saints, the big play to Thielen in the playoff game against the Saints stands out. Because that was one play in this guy's career, which, by the way, now is, what, 8-plus years in as a starter. It's one play that you keep going back to because it's so rare. Like, can you imagine, and again, Kirk is not these guys, but can you imagine, like, if one play stood out from the best QBs where you consistently kept going back to it? Like,
it
there's an array
of plays. It gets lost, yeah.
Exactly, because there's a resume of plays. So yeah. That statistic in and of itself does not surprise me.
Yeah. So it's a huge thing. And again, some of it's on Kirk. Some of it's on offensive line and protection. Some of it's on scheme, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, on third down is where you make your money as a quarterback. All right, well, we're in this situation. However we got there, it's third down and eight, and I need to make a throw regardless of what's happening.
Yes.
That's how it works in the NFL.
Yep.
All right, category number three here. Passing game versus pressure. Again, pressure is inevitable in the NFL. The best offensive lines and teams are still allowing pressure on like 20 to 25% of dropbacks. So it's a thing in the NFL, especially on the road, especially when you're trailing, especially on third down. Mm-hmm. And week one at home, the Vikings and Kirk were excellent when facing pressure against the Packers. He shredded the Packers. It was one of the best games he's ever played when pressured.
Yeah.
Week two was a different story. It was a train wreck. He was 5 of 13, one touchdown, two interceptions, a couple of near interceptions as well when pressured, and averaged under 3 yards per attempt. So that fell more in line with the last few years of his career, which is he has been one once you statistically, this is not just like making stuff up for clicks here, okay? This is, which we don't do. Except for our clickbait officer,
about
Declan.
To say,
sometimes
he's and Phil's not the one putting tweets out. Everyone's like, "Oh, Mackey putting out his own tweets." No, that is me. Phil does not put out his own tweets on the Score North account. That is me
not
stealing
that
the word.
Vein.
Yeah.
So statistically, he has not been good against pressure, and statistically, he has not been good once he gets past his first read. Okay. So this is the partnership between Kevin O'Connell and Kirk. This is the sweet spot here, man. Like third downs and facing pressure, can they be better as an offense? Can he be better as a quarterback? Week one was a great blueprint. Week two was the opposite. So what's going to happen against the Lions? Other road games? How is it going to look? It's just been a mixed bag so far through two games.
So I guess my question off the last thing is this. What is the – this starts with O'Connell, and certainly it involves Kirk. What is the adjustment now? Because, you know – there's no question the Eagles on both sides of the football saw things on film and said, oh, we know how to disrupt that or stop mm-hmm. that. So I guess my question is for this game, and Detroit likes to bring pressure. Like, they will bring pressure. What is the adjustment to now give the Lions at least slightly different look at times to keep them off balance when pressure is coming from Detroit.
Yeah. And then I have a fourth bonus category for you guys here when it comes to great offenses and how they operate.
Beautiful.
And this category is getting the ball to your best weapons, which unless you have, and I will say specifically in the passing game. So let's take away handoffs for a second here. This is just in the passing game, getting the ball to your best weapons. Now, there are some teams like Kansas City that have an amazing Hall of Fame pass-catching tight end like Travis Kelce or, you know, San Francisco with George Kittle when he's healthy, et cetera. So there are definitely some tight ends out there. The Vikings, all due respect to our guy, Johnny Munt, they don't really have an explosive pass-catching tight end. They don't have a Gronk or a Travis Kelce. So in the absence of having that tight end, your goal should be to get the ball to your explosive wide receivers. So for some context here, I'll use the Rams last year again. 72% of Matthew Stafford's passes went to wide receivers last year. Okay. The Buffalo Bills, I'll use them again. 71% of Josh Allen's passes went to wide receivers last year. The Vikings last year under Mike Zimmer, Kubiak, 60% of throws went to wide receivers. So again, we're talking 72, 71 for some of these top offenses, 60% to wide receivers last year. Okay, all right, got it. Let's get the ball to Thielen, get the ball to Jefferson, get the ball to KJ Osborne. Well, so far this year, it's 55%. 55% of targets have gone to wide receivers for the Vikings, which means 45% of their passing targets have gone to running backs, tight ends, and the one to CJ Ham. And I don't think that those players are explosive enough, maybe Dalvin Cook here and there, but the other players in that grouping aren't explosive enough to be getting 45% of your targets. So again, some of this is probably schematics. Some of it's things that the defense is just forcing you into. Yep. Some of it's the quarterback making decisions to go away from top weapons. KJ Osborne's done nothing really so far this year, right? Thielen, you know, took until garbage time. So that is something that needs to bump up. The Vikings, without a great pass-catching tight end, probably need to go from 55 to like 70% targets to wide receivers ASAP. What do you guys think?
So I think that this goes back to a conversation that we had as the regular season was approaching. Offensively, so there are some Kirk things I've seen good in week one and concerning in week two. But remember, I don't think these guys were lying when they said that this system introduced a lot of very complex things. And so I think in fairness to the entire offense, and this is not excusing completely falling apart, in my opinion, in the second half against Philadelphia, but I think this is going to take some time. So like, am I really putting weight on Thielen's lack of activity through two games? Not yet. Now, if we're five or six games in and he's still not seeing the football, that changes things. Do I think that there needs to be a bit more, if not far more, dedication to getting the ball in some way, shape, or form more consistently to Dalvin Cook? Absolutely. But I don't think anybody was kidding when they talked about, and you could see this in training camp practices too, that this was going to be a work in progress. So I think the first month or so, it's going to be trial and error. It's going to be some mistakes. And I'm not going to start to really try and pick apart what's going wrong with the scheme itself until we're at least a month plus in. That doesn't mean that I don't want to see more from certain players, if that makes sense. But schematically, I think that there's a lot of things that O'Connell brought from the Rams system that are probably get into the difficulty of X's and O's and it becoming more second nature to run the plays absolutely correctly.
Yes.
And potentially fire on all cylinders. So I'm not concerned yet.
I asked our guy, Alex Boone, on the Trenches podcast the other day, part of the Purple Daily podcast feed, Purple Daily YouTube channel.
Love it.
I said, realistically, it was too much to expect this thing to just look the way that it's supposed to look after two games. I said, how many weeks until this offense should look the way it's supposed to look? He said, four or five.
Yep.
He said if they're not clicking on all cylinders by like the fourth or fifth game, then something's off, or there are components that are wrong. So, but that's coming up quick, man. This is week three, and then you got the London and then Bears games in that 4 to 5 week range. So if basically what Booney is saying is if by the time that Saints game in London rolls around or the Bears game the week after, and that's a weird travel situation, so there might be other variables. But if your offense isn't looking a little bit more clean and smooth on a regular basis, then time to dig a little deeper.
If you can't match the Dolphins by that game, you're just flat out in a ton of trouble. Like, that's the game where it's go time. I think you can beat the Bears by showing up and taking the game seriously. I think the Dolphins game is where if it's still like, whoa, this offense, well, we don't, you know, the Dolphins are going to score points. And that becomes a game where you have to match them, which look, Monday that fell woefully short. But I think by the Dolphins game, it's very fair to expect this offense to be operating extremely efficiently. It's clearly not there yet.
By the way, on the defensive side, we'll get to, maybe we can throw this into the bin that is, what are people saying about the Vikings? Because Ed Donatell is saying some really interesting things about what happened on Monday night. Okay. But before we get to what are people saying about the Vikings, that breakdown of the Vikings' current offensive problems presented by our friends at Underdog Fantasy. Declan Goff.
Yes, Underdog Fantasy, the Underdog Fantasy app. So it is Thursday Night Football this evening against the Steelers. Who do we got? Steelers and Browns. And so Dex Tweets had a pretty rough week of it, a rough go of it, Underdog Fantasy. Here's also the good part, though, about having a rough week. You can fade my selection. So I'm going to pop this on the YouTube screen right here. All right, so it's Mitch Trubisky versus Jacoby Brissett. Godspeed for everyone who watches this game. But I put the higher on the rushing yards at 12.5 for both of these quarterbacks. I think both of them can get 13 yards rushing because God knows they can't really pass the ball down the field too well. So you can make these picks with me, or you can fade these picks. The link is in the bio. You can either make money with me, or you can make money against me because I'm sometimes an idiot. Underdog Fantasy. Download the Underdog Fantasy app. Promo code SCORE, S-K-O-R. They'll match your first deposit up to $100. Underdog Fantasy in the Underdog Fantasy app.
It's a great way to do it. If you think we're idiots, why don't you put your money where your mouth is?
I might do that tonight.
Fade me.
Fade Declan. I played along with him last time. It didn't work out so well for me.
Speaking of fading, the weight has faded off Judd's body over the past 12 months or so. It's crazy.
That is true. That's true. And that, of course, as I've been talking about for months now, thanks to our friends at Livia Weight Control Centers, down 40 pounds, keeping that weight off, which is the most important thing. Dawn joined. She's down 16 plus pounds. And look, it works. It works as a really, really, in my opinion, easy way to lose the weight. And then again, the most important thing is to keep that the weight off. If you join now, you'll receive 8 weeks for free. And the new Flex program lets you enjoy the foods you love. That includes, you know, fruit, pasta, and bread. And with in-person or virtual visit options, state-of-the-art equipment to take account of your body composition, and an app to track your progress. You're going to see results fast. How do you do it? Livia.com, Livea.com, 855-GO-LIVEA. Livia.com is where the weight loss starts.
All right, let's get into what are people saying about the Vikings here, where we scour the internet. Sometimes sometimes the comments are coming from inside the house, which is what happened today at the Ed Donatell press conference. So Kevin Seifert has a great summation of Ed Donatell's time speaking to the media here. He says, on the first half against the Eagles, which was a train wreck, Donatell said, quote, "There's no question our execution was off." Seifert then asked Donatell about the scheme he used, which led to 24 points and 347 yards allowed by halftime. And Donatell disputed that he played only a shell defense, calling the term overused. So he's saying he's defending his scheme and saying the execution was off. Donatell added that cornerback Cam Dantzler, quote, misread what was in front of him on the coverage bust that led to a 53-yard touchdown pass on Monday night. And then Caleb Evans replaced Dantzler late. No starting lineup change is expected. Dantzler's going to be back as the starter, but that 53-yard touchdown pass. So Bynum chose to bite on a tight end underneath route, leaving Dantzler alone. And Dantzler, I think, I'd have to go watch the play again, Dantzler maybe thought that Bynum was going to be behind him on that play.
Yeah.
So there was some miscommunication, and Donatell singled out Dantzler as the guy that misread what was happening on that play. So, you know, either way.
Boy, I'd like to hear his response, the player's response.
I think Dantzler's not shy about giving his response sometimes.
I think you're exactly right about that, but I would love to know more about that play, the design, and if the player agrees that, yeah, you know what? The scheme was fantastic. The execution was your... That's interesting.
So like Seifert it. Puts one more bow on this and yeah. says, to sum it all up, Donatell considered the first half of Monday night's game to be an issue of execution, not scheme and game plan. Everyone can have an opinion on it, but that's his opinion. Dude, Kevin Seifert is so good.
Oh, it's great to have
him. Oh, man, he's back on that beat. ESPN.com. You want to read his stuff.
Fantastic.
So, all right. Well, it's... Well, maybe it is a great scheme. It looked like a great scheme in week 1 against the Packers. We'll see what it looks like against the Lions here.
Yeah, interesting.
Let's keep moving through what are people saying about the Vikings. Again, another call that's coming from inside the house. This is actually part of our old tweets exposed catalog here. We didn't have time on Mackey and Judd today, so Declan is going to bring some old takes exposed to the table here.
All right, this was from OTAs with Judd Zolgad's first observation.
Don't laugh, because you're going to laugh, but don't laugh. Don't sleep early in the season on Johnny Munt, tight end from the Rams. Johnny Munt.
That worries me.
Okay, but here's why. I don't want to worry you. I don't want to worry you, and I don't want to say that this is a long-term thing. But let me explain myself very quickly here. Don't sleep on the fact that Johnny Munt knows this scheme, and it's clear inside and out. He is going right now at full speed, where and this is not a criticism. Again, I want to make it very clear. This is not Vikings hating. But it's very clear that there's lots of guys that are like, their head is swimming. They're trying to learn, right? Johnny Munt's learned this whole thing.
Johnny Munt's been in the NFL for 5 years. He's caught 10 passes.
I know. But what I'm saying is Johnny Munt is a guy that early in the season could give you a few key catches here and there. I'm not saying he's going to become a star. I'm just saying the fact that he knows the system is going could be an early season asset. I should get a point for that.
Good for you.
Thanks, Dex. That
You're
analysis.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Spot on.
It legitimately was, and you nailed it down to the. Hey, I'm not saying he's going to be a massive piece, but he could get you a few key catches early, which is exactly what he has done so far.
Yep.
So Johnny Munt, and by the way, I was wrong. I apologize for doubting Judd's observations at training camp, which
Johnny
were
Munt.
Spot on, and for doubting Johnny Munt. Johnny Munt, this is year 6 in the NFL. He has already, through 2 weeks, set a career high in receptions for a season. And he is 8 off his career high in yards. His previous best season was 2020 with the Rams. He caught 4 passes for 53 yards and 1 first down in that game. So, or in that season, I should say.
8 yards could come on Sunday against the Lions, couldn't it, gentlemen?
Oh, I think it will, and I think it'll be a touchdown, as I already predicted this week. And
now you're on. You know what? Yeah. Mackie, get off the Munt bandwagon. You weren't on when it mattered. Now you can't get on.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, congrats to Judd there for nailing that one.
It was a great find, Dex. I love that stuff.
All right, what are people saying about the Vikings? Let's go to theringer.com, where their weekly quarterback rankings have been updated. Now, I believe... They moved Kirk. They had Kirk at like 15 or 16 in week 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got really excited, as everyone did, after the first game.
You can see where he goes if like you go by the above their name. I believe there's a little graph. So I think he went up to 12 or 13.
13. Yeah, yeah. He went from 15 to 13
mm-hmm.
after the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And now they bumped him back down to 15 after
okay.
the debacle performance. I think the breakdown here is more, it's like the breakdown from the beginning of the season. So I'm not going to read you that, but they've got him now, and you can, this is the debate here. So I'll read the ones that are above him. By the way, they have Jalen Hurts behind Kirk at 16th.
But he's risen. He's what he was.
From 21st to 16th.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm taking Jalen Hurts. I'll take the mobility and whatnot. But above Kirk, they now have Matt Ryan, 14.
No.
Derek Carr, 13. Trevor Lawrence, I agree with. Got mocked for saying that before. before training camp. 12, Matthew Stafford. 11, Joe Burrow. 10, Dak, Russ, Kyler, Lamar, et cetera, et cetera. So do you agree that he is now worse than Matt Ryan or Derek Carr?
No, I think he's better than Matt Ryan. I think Jalen Hurts should be above Kirk. I guess I don't really agree with how those rankings fall out. And the Colts are a mess, you guys. The Colts are just a mess.
Yeah. I kind of thought, and listen, that division is so bad, there's plenty of time for them to turn it around.
Sure.
I kind of thought, oh, this has some 2009 Vikings vibes where you bring in the old washed-up gunslinger, but he's got one more ride left in him with a roster that's ready to rock. Yeah. But I don't know, man. It looks pretty ugly. So I guess, is that accurate? Kirk Cousins is now the 15th best quarterback in the NFL, or would you put him higher?
It's about right.
I'd put Jalen Hurts above Kirk right now. Hurts is off to a really good start, and I think he's a good quarterback.
Tua has risen from 23rd to 18th, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that might be completely legit, too. That game on Sunday cannot be dismissed.
Helps to have wide open, fast receivers being schemed across the field, too.
Good for him,
he was hitting wide open targets in that game, but he hit for 400 plus yards. So
I'm not going to put him down for that.
So there it is. That's what people are saying about the Minnesota Vikings here. Vikings Vent Line, by the way, the most fan-friendly interactive show in Minnesota sports, will be taking flight again right after the Vikings-Lions game ends on Sunday. So if you haven't experienced it, or if you want some more therapy, win or lose, we've got you covered on the Purple Daily YouTube channel. Before we get to Random Viking of the Week, Judd, why don't you show the audience those glorious Minnesota Lottery scratch-off tickets?
Right here.
Look at those things, man.
Oh, they're beautiful. And here's the nice thing. Win or lose. So if the Vikings lose, yeah, that might suck. But guess what? You can still win big. And that is not a misprint. That is $10.2 million in total cash prizes. Because right now, it's time to go big with the lottery's big ticket scratch game. It's so big, it has huge second chance prizes. The lottery, just say I'm in. You must be 18 or older to go big. But again, it can make a Vikings loss. It can soothe the pain just a little bit if you can win some cash with this Vikings scratch game.
I want to see the Vikings rain passes down on Justin Jefferson's head this Sunday. Like hail coming from the top of U.S. Bank Stadium.
Wow.
Yeah, might cause some damage, but there's a place to call if it does cause
damage. Hey, Man Campbell, if Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne are running up and down your defense, you might want to call our friends at Hail Ace. Our guy Adam in South St. Paul with Hail Ace, he fixes automotive hail damage. We got some hail even this week in the eastern suburbs. They will work with insurance companies to help you handle your claim from start to finish, and the hail damage claims do not raise your insurance rates. You might think, oh my gosh, my insurance rates are going to go up. No, he'll take care of that for you. You can book this appointment at hailace.com. And for all Vikings fans, if you bring in your vehicle during September and October, you'll be entered in a drawing for a late season Vikings tickets to the Polaris Club. The Polaris Club, baby. So you can fix your car. You can get maybe a drawing for a Vikings game. Go to hailace.com to book your appointment now.
All right. What are people saying about the Minnesota Vikings transitioning into Random Viking of the Week here, where Judd faces off against the combination of Declan and or myself? It has become a 2-on-1 battle every week because Judd has dominated. He has a 35-18 lead. This week, I will throw out the clues. Declan will step in to the ring against
Judd Zulgad here. I suffered a devastating loss last
week. Yeah, some people were saying you should have gotten the point, but I sorry, you didn't say the name. Yeah, some people said it was a little bit of BS on my part to award it to Mackie, but you never said the name. You just said, oh, it's...
Oh, no, I did. I did say the name, but Phil heard, and I mean, it was my fault, but Phil heard my response, said the name as I was going to say it. It was a very dumb move.
Phil said
like,
it before.
I would have liked
you never
the
said
point,
the name before
not,
Phil did.
Well, and I'm mad at myself. Like, I looked at the film, and, you know, I mean, it's my fault. Like, that was all
my
fault.
Do we need
fault.
To slow down the film and the audio to make sure that I said the name? Reese.
No, you know what?
You said the gopher kicker, and then Phil immediately said
no,
Reese
Phil
Lloyd.
Said it.
That's not...
But I mean, first of all...
His name's not gopher kicker.
Through back channels, I did hear that it might have been somewhat of a BS win. But you know what? There's no excuses here. It's my fault. I take full responsibility. I own it.
I mean, this is 100% self-inflicted. I'm glad you're owning
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
If I were to come out, like if the tables were turned.
And I would want the point.
Now, in my head, I would have been thinking, oh, I think he's talking about the Gophers kicker. But I would have strategically kept that part in my own thoughts.
Nope,
if I come out, like I'm looking at previous random Vikings here, by the way, Jeb went on a run earlier in the season where he guessed Matthew Hatchett, Phil Lodeholt, Bobby Wade, Sean Salisbury, Jim Kleinsasser, Mawelde Moore, Archie Manning, and Sage Rosenfels all in a row. Mm-hmm. If we got to that Sage Rosenfels one and I said out loud, oh, it's the Iowa State quarterback that backed up Brett Favre in 2009, and you said Sage Rosenfels.
You're right.
You know,
no, I'm blaming myself. I'm blaming myself. It was self-inflicted. It was absolutely stupid. And I'm going to tell you right now, it partially had to do with the fact that the previous night, I had a lot of surly. And I wasn't thinking clearly. It's ironic that a beer named Logic Bomb, in my opinion, caused me to do something illogical. So I hope to be better this week.
Amazing. All right.
Not, it's just stupid.
Let's get to the game here. So right. I'm going to throw out a series of clues. You guys get up to 3 incorrect guesses before you are eliminated. You can ask me questions, but I can refuse to answer them if I want. This random Viking of the Week hails originally from Cincinnati, Ohio. This random Viking of the Week played college football in the Big Ten.
Oh.
You got it?
No, because I was going to guess a former Viking tight end who is from Cincinnati, I believe. But
wow, Judd had a guess ready to rock.
But it's not a Big Ten player. It's a Fighting Irish player that I was going to guess. So it wouldn't be right.
This random Viking of the Week. Let's see here. This random Viking of the Week. I'm going to get you this clue. This is a great clue. In a 2020 episode of Catfish, the TV show, the host discovered that the catfish they are tracking down in the episode used this random Viking of the Week's photos on a fake Instagram account.
Oh, Declan might get this now.
I love Catfish.
It's a great show. Man. Oh. I did not know. I have not seen this episode. But
so
that
he
is
used
amazing.
This guy's photos?
Yes. So somebody was... launched a fake Instagram account with this random Viking of the Week's photos to try and like hook up with girls.
I got you. I don't know the show as well. Don loved it.
This random Viking of the Week made $14 million playing football. This random Viking of the Week, he felt that his NFL career was cut off a little earlier than he would like. He was quoted once as saying, when they say you're a bad apple, they don't want you on your team, on their team. This random Viking of the Week was a two-sport athlete.
That's not surprising, I guess. So, wait, a two-sport athlete in college or just...
He played two sports for money. This random Viking of the Week, I just took a scroll through his Twitter account. He appears to be an underwear model now for a company called Myth Body Collection. Myth Body Collection is normalizing sexy. Being free in one's body is the greatest liberty.
So this is a good looking man.
And no, John Sullivan is not the answer.
He was also. He's from Connecticut.
Nor is Phil Lodeholt.
Yeah, this has to be a skill position guy.
Well, this random Viking of the Week ran a 4.8 40-yard dash in college.
4.8?
A 4.8.
That's not that fast.
This random Viking of the Week scored one touchdown in his career in 97 career NFL games. Boy, one of the photos on this Myth body collection that he retweeted is definitely just a close-up shot of his mid-region in a pair of underwear. Definitely below the belly button and well above the kneecaps. Zoomed in. That is the photo. Red underwear. All righty.
Okay, so one touchdown in 97 games.
Mm-hmm. This random Viking of the Week played for two NFL coaches, Brad Childress and Mike Smith.
Ray Edwards.
We have a guess. And it is correct.
Oh, nice. Nice. Good job, Dex.
Ray Edwards is now an underwear model.
Oh, my God.
He was a two-sport athlete, and that he also was a 12-1 record as a professional boxer.
I saw him against a complete tomato can with Pelissero in, like, Duluth or something.
Grand Casino Hinckley.
He was 12-1 boxing against guys like me.
Dude, there is – let me pull this up, man. There's a list of all of his boxing opponents. And, like, almost none of them have Wikipedia pages because, you know.
No, the guy I saw him against was literally probably 40 pounds heavy.
Okay.
Like he was.
He
was terrible, by the way.
Dude, they've got a list of. Here's the list of his boxing opponents. Not a full list, but they all have, like, nicknames, but none of them are actual. They don't have, like, Wikipedia pages or anything.
Right.
Corey Spare Tire Briggs.
That's probably who I saw him against because he had a spare tire.
Okay, he knocked that guy out in 41 seconds.
Jeez.
Nick TurboTax Capes, he knocked out in 29 seconds at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds in North Dakota. Minivan Goodman, he beat in at Grand Casino Hinckley.
What are these, mobsters or boxers?
I know. Sam, like I am coming. He beat.
Good. I don't even want to.
DJ, don't get me confused with DL Hewley. He beat once in North Carolina. Okay. Brandon the Sizzler Spencer. He won via unanimous decision in six rounds.
Yeah.
And then his only loss came in 2016 to Keenan Goodberger Hickman via knockout.
Yeah, just to be clear, he lost the day he stepped into the ring at all. I mean, it was.
I wonder how much money he made for those 13. Well, he had a draw against Grover Young.
I don't think he made much at all. He was hoping to be a real boxer, but when we saw him, it was not going to work.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. So
again,
I watched Declan Goff, dude, coming
that's
in.
That's a sport where if you're good, it's like, well, of course, that doesn't look, you know, and then you like see a guy who's got no footwork. Yeah, nice job by Declan.
Well, I knew he played for the Falcons. God, he signed a 5-year, $30 million contract and was cut after a season and a half.
That's why you got to look at the guarantee on those contracts.
Yeah.
But I think
11 mil guaranteed.
Pain.
Mm. Anyway. So that's two. Nice. That's called a winning streak, right? We got two wins in a row over
Judd
here.
One, let's be very clear. This one was far more legit than yours last week, Phil.
I took a college class with Reese Lloyd once. I know more about Reese Lloyd than you ever will.
I had the answer and I gave it to you now, but Declan deserves a round of applause because that's a heck of a win.
Nice job, Dex.
Thank you.
Nice job out there. All right. That's your Purple Daily, Daily Vikings Entertainment for today. Don't forget to check out our friends Jesse and Thor on the Before We Die podcast, Purple Daily podcast feed, and the Purple Daily YouTube channel, and also Vikings Vent Line again right after Vikings and Lions this Sunday. We'll see you guys tomorrow for a little Feedback Friday.